Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program heard weekdays on 18 radio stations with 27 signals all across the Treasure State. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook at Voices of Montana and on the internet at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. My math has been really tested by the number of folks who are running for seats in the U.S. House of Representatives from the state of Montana. There's about 18, I think, if I'm not mistaken. That's all told. And we've been busy giving you that chance to hear from those who are seeking your vote. So we're doing that today in studio. Current state auditor Troy Downing is with us. He's among a dozen of those folks. It's a pretty crowded primary ticket. This is for the Eastern District seat. Troy Downing in studio here. Troy, how are you?
I'm doing great. And I just want to, you know, point something out. You were talking about all the people in this race. We prefer to talk about the people who are not in this race. Easier number.
Gotcha. Like myself.
Tom Schultz.
Is it too late to get in it, though?
I think it is too late. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But, I mean, the thing is I think we set ourselves apart. And one thing that I've been blessed with is, I've got my whole life, I've been a worker. I know how to show up, do the work. And it's showing. We're leading in polls. We're leading in fundraising. We're leading this race. And the one thing I will say is you may find people that are taller, thinner, or more handsome, but nobody's going to outwork us. And I'm really happy with the support that we've had and the position we have, and we're just going to take it home.
Well, I'll tell you, that seat that you're seeking, it is a work. It's for workaholics.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of big problems we got to deal with right now. I mean, the Biden administration has taken everything that the Trump administration did that was positive for this country and just squandered it. I mean, even what's going on at the southern border, Trump had Title 42 keeping people, on the other side until they could be processed. What he's done with taxes, with the economy, inflation was under control. Trump was a businessman that knew how to run a business, and that translated in how to make it easy to run a business as a country. And that's our jobs. That's our economy. That's how we build that American dream. And Joe Biden, he has just squandered all of that, from national security to, domestic production to supporting businesses to everything that we need for our kids, our grandkids, to have the same opportunities to build that American dream. I mean, even one of the things that scares me right now about this is I've been blessed. This country's been good to me.
I'm going to ask you, because we normally start with who is Troy? But go ahead and continue with your story. We'll get your blessings later. Continue with your story there.
I'm just going to say that one of the things that really concerns me is, my story starts out pretty simple. I was the unplanned pregnancy of an unwed teenage mom. Didn't have a lot of opportunity. I didn't have family money. I didn't have family connections. But I learned if you wanted to do something, you had to work for it. And I showed up and I worked hard and continued to do that and was incredibly successful because of, two things. I did the work and because of the opportunities that we have as Americans. That American dream is real. And, I was more successful than I would have ever imagined because of that opportunity. And what scares me right now is how, inflation – the tax code, everything that we're dealing with is pushing that farther and farther away. And I worry about, the kids that are in high school right now, in college, even those that have, marketable trades, being able to even buy their first house right now. I think that brass ring is getting farther and farther away. And that's something that we need to fight because the United States of America is that shining beacon, and we need to make sure that we maintain that, everything that she represents.
Yeah, and we've talked about this administration. It seems like, well, now the war on energy, that's quote-unquote a phrase. There's what seems like a war on small business as well when you look at some of these regulations. And let me say, Troy Downing, Eastern District U.S. House candidate, Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, and Montana's state auditor, the work you're talking about is you founded some technology.
Yeah.
Startup companies as well, and were successful in that, and also served U.S. Air Force, Air National Guard. So I appreciate that, and thank you for that service.
It's my honor
as well.
Yeah, and people ask me that often because I I was, you know, successful at a fairly young age. And, you know, it's like that old joke, you know, the more I work, the luckier I get. And, you know, that's what I do. I work, and this country's been good to me. And when I went into the Air Force, it was after September 11th. It was after this country had been attacked. And, you know, it was a moment of introspection for me, you know, growing up without money, without resources, and being able to be as successful as I was. And when this country was attacked, I asked myself, what have I ever done to deserve this? And I didn't have a good answer, and I needed to do something. And, you know, I walked into a recruiter's office, and, I looked at the recruiter and I said, hey, I'm, you know, I used to teach at NYU. I've got a pilot's license. What can you do with me? And that recruiter said, you know, how old are you? I said, 34. He goes, good. 35 is the cutoff. So I ended up getting sworn in. I went into a combat search and rescue squadron, did a couple of tours to Afghanistan. And, you know, when I first got recruited for that, it was interesting. The recruiter brought in a guy, a flight engineer, and he's telling me about his job. He says, we take these helicopters, we fly them in formation, you know, 50 feet off the deck in the middle of the night with night vision goggles on, and we go find busted up kids out in the desert and bring them home. And, you know, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and I'm going, that's me. And so, you know, went into the Air Force, did a couple of tours to Afghanistan, a little bit of active duty, a lot of Air National Guard, which was an entirely different thing, because we did a lot of like counter drug missions with the DEA, you know, down near the southern border. And almost like a domestic combat mission, you know, doing some of that stuff was really interesting and gave me a good perspective of what's going on down there. And we did some domestic search and rescue, but, you know, that was the beginning of a journey. A lot of my, you know, friends, my family, my colleagues didn't understand. They're saying, hey, you know, you've been successful. Why don't you retire? Why don't you go fishing? I'm going, well, I've got something to give, and I really personally need to feel that I deserve these opportunities that were so freely given to me just for having been born in the, you know, greatest nation that's ever, you know, graced God's creation. And so that was the start, you know, of true public service for me.
I appreciate that story too. You, and when you walk into war at that age, so to speak, your eyes are probably fully open. You probably are aware of sacrifices.
Yeah.
You know, that moment of introspection must have been a pretty heavy moment. What were you like when you walked out of war?
You know, I got to tell you, it was it's so much a part of me now. That mission, the people that I worked with, the operators that did the mission, were some of the greatest people and still some of my best friends. And that makes me smile. We're still talking. I was getting, you know, from one of my friends that I've deployed with in the past, sent me, this has been a couple of months ago, you know, sent me a text and saying, everybody's okay. I'm going, what do you mean everybody's okay? He says, oh, we got deployed to Tower 20 that nobody knew about until, you know, that drone, you know, dropped the explosives. And he said, you'd be proud of the team because we showed up. Nobody got hurt. We dealt with the problem. And I'm going, so my friends are still out there and they're still reaching out to me. And so it still gives me this feeling of connection. But I'll tell you, the mission, I love the mission. Nobody's ever upset when search and rescue shows up. And, you know, getting people off the battlefield, getting, you know, people home is awesome. I mean, there's been bad days too. You know, I had one mission in Goreshk where, we were supporting, three Chinooks bringing in a bunch of, special forces troops, and, the third helicopter took an RPG up the back. And, so we were spring loaded, getting ready to do a recovery, but it was never safe to get in there, and, ended up, you know, being a body recovery. And I'll tell you, you know, a lot of stuff that happens in this nation with people not, you know, honoring and respecting the flag. I want them to know what it feels like to stand in formation, staring at the sun, tears running down your face, watching caskets get loaded into a C-17 with people that you were doing a mission with a couple of days prior. Mm-hmm. I want them to understand the sacrifices that people pay defending this great nation. And it just, you know, here's, I probably shouldn't admit this. Well, I mean, it's just who I am, is when they started taking knees in football games, I stopped watching football games.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I go.
As much as I could, Troy, I have to admit, as much as I could, I stopped watching football games. I really couldn't, though.
I just, I found that so offensive.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I still feel that way. It's the same way with whatever the WNBA or whenever those things come out. And I can appreciate how deeply felt that is to a certain degree. The moments that that you recollect with all of that too make up your desire for public service as well. These issues that we'll get into here in more detail too. They're very real to you. It seems
absolutely.
Like because of that experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, I'm going to go back to my main theme. I mean, this is an amazing country, and we've got to fight like heck to make sure we don't lose it. And I think it is being threatened, and in a lot of different ways. You know, remember when President Trump was there, we didn't have that southern border invasion. And right now, it's just crazy. Under the Biden administration, we've just got a porous southern border. We've got bad guys making it up to Montana. We've got, you know, cartel, you know, gangs. We've got, you know, cartels type crime here.
Yeah.
And our law enforcement, not just in Yellowstone County, you know, across the state, are running ragged because the crime has gotten so much higher and so much more severe. And they just don't have the boots on the ground. I mean, that's a big problem. I was just actually down at the southern border with one of my colleagues who is a two-star general who brought the first Army troops down there in 2017. And we went and toured it. And under the Trump administration, we had Title 42 keeping them on the other side of the border. Under the Biden administration, we've got all these Army troops that are just sitting there watching cartel scouts across the fence. They can't touch, interdict, deal with anybody. The wall ends there. I was in Ajo, Arizona, where the wall ends. And these guys are just walking around the wall and waiting for Border Patrol to pick them up, process them, and release them into the country. And these are not economic refugees. These are not people coming from, you know, South America or for south of the border looking for jobs. These were clearly, you know, West Africans, Middle Easterns, Chinese. There's all these people coming across. Military age from countries that that want to see the end of the United States of America. And, you know, the Trump administration, you know, had a cork on that. The Biden administration has squandered that. And that is a threat to this country. National security is a big issue for me.
Tough to see how that story ends real well for the United States in terms of what we have allowed with our southern border.
Yeah.
And how there are so many unidentified threats now, I think, because of that. We don't want to overblow it. There's still a lot of people that hopefully are going to have, you know, whatever. We've got a mess to figure out.
We have
that's
a
for
huge
sure.
mess.
And I don't think we've yet begun to understand the full ramifications of it. So Troy Downing, Montana's current Commissioner of Securities and Insurance, also the state auditor, wears those hats, is looking to put another one on here as he's thrown himself into the ring for Eastern District U.S. House candidate. And joining us now on Voices of Montana, Tom Schultz back alongside. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you coming in and appreciate hearing some of those stories, too. You know, that call to service, so to speak, you know, at that age of 34.
Thank you.
I can appreciate that. And as I wrote this down, too, because I was talking with Senator Daines yesterday. And again, just reading a section of Proverbs, it talks about wisdom. Right. And I'm going, where's the wisdom in some of these debates that we're having in Washington, D.C.?
We should all pray for wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah. So if as a, you know, combat search and rescue squadron member, will you go out, search and rescue wisdom for us in public policy?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is, you know, a lot of people, when they hear some of my stories, they're saying, oh, that's great. You did this. You did that. You did something else. And I always respond, I never did anything. It was always we. Mm-hmm. And the we comes from surrounding yourself by smart people, by good people, people that have, you know, different opinions, different voices, and putting together teams that can actually, you know, look at problems from lots of different angles. And I think that's a version of wisdom, is being able to really, you know, take in a lot of information and figure out what the right policy decision is. Even in my office right now, you know, we've got a great team. I've got open doors. Anybody can come in. I promise you're going to be listened to and considered. But ultimately, in that plurality of information, I'm going to make the policy decision because that's, you know, it's my name on the building. Mm-hmm. And that's how you do things. You surround yourself with smart, engaged people with servants' hearts that want to actually solve problems. And, you know, that's that version of wisdom that I think we're lacking right now.
There's a lot of smart people in D.C. So what's going on there? It doesn't seem like I see a lot of common sense to some of the things that we're, you know, dealing
with. Yeah, you know, I think there's, you know, there's a lot of fighting right now. And I think a lot of the stuff, I think the most of the stuff we agree on, You know, I think that sometimes we disagree on tactics, but, you know, the things that, we care about, you know, protecting this country, we care about national security. We care about, you know, reining in our spending, which has gone crazy. You know, we already talked about the border. I mean, without a country without a border is not a country, you know, so all this kind of stuff. And, you know, a lot of these issues that we're dealing with, like the spending, I think is, you know, one of the top priorities because, you know, the reason that the United States of America is that shining beacon is because of that American dream, because of that opportunity we've already spoken about. Mm-hmm. And as we start to, you know, spend ourselves into oblivion, I think there's a very real risk that the rest of the world, you know, is, you know, convinced that there's no reason to have the dollar being the global trading currency. So, you know, what about the yuan? You know, if that switch flips, all is lost. And that's not something that you fix in a administration. That's something that could be a multi-generational problem where we've completely lost that American dream. And we need people to show up that are willing to actually roll up their sleeves, have the intestinal fortitude to, you know, make the right decisions and, you know, keep standing up for all of these pressures that are going to start destroying the United States. And when I talk about national security, that's so many issues. We talked about the border. The other thing is food security is national security. And a lot of people aren't thinking about that as we start losing production agriculture. And I know we passed a bill in Montana prohibiting, you know, adversarial actors from owning agricultural land in Montana. I think that's a good step. But we need to make sure that we are protecting not just from production agriculture being in you know, adversary hands, but having it just being shut down, having, you know, this closing down because we're not supporting our farmers and ranchers. And food security is national security. Energy independence is national security. So how do you hurt a country? You make it so it can't feed itself or so it can't heat its homes or put gas in its cars. That's how you hurt a country. And if you can't produce that from within, we're sitting ducks. And one of the things I know that President Trump was criticized for at the time, but I think was spot on because you never really want to get into trade wars. But when he started talking about those tariffs on steel and aluminum, that's, again, it's a national security issue. We need to make sure that we are producing everything that we need to defend ourselves, feed ourselves, heat ourselves within our borders, not depend on any other country for that stuff. And I think that's incredibly important.
Troy Downing, again, is with us here, Eastern District U.S. House candidate. We're at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. As your seat with the securities and insurance as commissioner there, also Montana State Auditor, we've talked a lot about fraud. You tell some terrible stories about fraud, and I think it's always important to go ahead and do that. But I'm going to go back with one of the other things, healthcare. Healthcare, right. We're struggling with healthcare in this country in a lot of ways. And you have done some things in your position there, PBMs, drug pricing, healthcare premiums. How on a national level do we better provide for quality healthcare, affordable healthcare? I know it's a tough question that also keeps the administration, the hospitals going, as well as provides the quality care we need.
Well, first of all, I'm going to go back to the Obama administration. I mean, the Affordable Care Act was anything but. Mm-hmm. You know, the Affordable Care Act has obviously caused insurance premiums to rise. And so one of the things that I ran on for my current office is just having other tools in the toolbox. And so a lot of things that we looked at were alternatives so that we had, you know, the right product for the right, you know, people at the right price and making sure that there was, you know, market solutions for that. And since a lot of these are things that weren't directly regulated under my office, we saw our position there was, you know, to basically educate the consumer on what they were buying and what they were not buying. And so some of those programs that we've championed, you know, from healthcare sharing ministries, as an alternative to insurance, and that's the right solution for some people. And we see our job is, you know, letting those consumers know what they're getting, know what they're not getting. The other part was direct primary care programs. You know, we championed a telemedicine bill to make it easier for people in remote areas to, you know, get medical attention, you know, over devices or you know, computers or, you know, telephones. So, I mean, we've done a lot of stuff to try to rein that in. And the other one that you talked about was PBMs, because one of the biggest growths in
what are PBMs, though?
So it's a pharmacy benefit manager. And what that is that's kind of the middle chain of the prescription drug, you know, supply chain. And basically they administer the drug programs for health plans. And so what we did is we passed two sessions ago a PBM transparency bill. You know, we approached this that we didn't want to be a bull in the china shop and just, you know, make it impossible for an industry to function. But we wanted everybody to know what was happening, because the complaints we got were about how they were reimbursing pharmacies, because a lot of the, you know, family pharmacies were complaining that they weren't being treated right. And so we said, well, let's turn the lights on. You know, if they're appealing decisions, we want to know what the PBMs are doing about that. How many of them are being upheld? How many are not? So we put that out there so we could just understand what was going on, because the pharmacy benefit manager industry, you know, they're taking rebates from manufacturers. So where should that go? You know, those are good questions. They're getting fees from manufacturers. They're getting all this stuff. So we just wanted to make sure that we were dealing with what was part of the biggest growth area in healthcare, which is drugs. I mean, that's one of the biggest, you know, expense growth areas in healthcare. So we looked at that very seriously, and we passed that bill, you know, I guess that's close to 3 years ago. And, you know, now we're starting to collect that data so we can figure out what, if anything, needs to happen next.
You know, I know in talking with you, and we're probably going to run out of time here before 9:35, but I know in talking with you, you have mentioned how policy maybe needs to take a longer view, play the long game,
right,
a little bit. And I like the answer about putting other tools in the toolbox, because you can't always necessarily fix something, get instant gratification for it. The policy has to be long term. In that vein, Troy Downing, I believe you have committed to staying in the House if you win this seat. Now, I think people have seen folks kind of use this seat as a little bit as a launching stone, which
right.
I don't mind that. I mean, you know, people want to serve.
Right.
But you have taken a different approach.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you know, you hear politicians say lots of things. I think it's always more telling to, you know, watch what they're doing. And in my current office, I'm incredibly proud of the team. And I have showed up to work, rolled up my sleeves, done the hard work, the easy work, all of the work, making sure that agency is all that it can be. And, you know, I always joke that, you know, we stay in our lane, but we use the whole lane. We feel the rumble strips on both sides. And to your question is, I think what we need, it would be very beneficial to Montana because of all the issues. Obviously, Montana is an energy, agriculture, and tourism state. We need to make sure that we have a front seat at the table. And so what my plan is here as after I get elected is to do exactly what I do, show up, roll my sleeves, do the work, and work my way into leadership. Because I think having Montana have a spot in leadership in Congress is going to be incredibly meaningful, because a lot of the issues that I deal with, even in my current job, are these big federal ideas that don't work in an agriculture state, that don't work in a rural state, that don't work in an energy state. And we need to have a front seat at the table to make sure that Montana is as best represented as it possibly can.
And that does take a kind of a longer view on this. So if you win this seat in 2024, you'll be running for this seat in 2026.
Right. Absolute 100%.
Yeah. Troy Downing, thanks again for being here. Appreciate that. We'll go quickly to the phones. I have got things. You told a fraud story that I need to get out there. You're talking about, you know, how you need tools to help fix healthcare. What about the energy debate? I want to get to that, but let's get to the phone. Skip is listening in Hamilton, KLYQ. And Skip, good morning. You're on the air with Troy Downing.
Good morning, Tom, and thank you. And Troy, I don't live in your district, sir, but I'm into good, healthy, educational debates, and then also certainly whole campaign seasons. And I'm wondering, is in this race, because there's so many people, especially, and I would say to separate out three or four that I would say really know what they're doing and are ready to go to Washington, do you think a debate for somehow set up would be a good idea?
Yeah,
certainly. Secondly, would you please explain what the state law would be? Because people wonder, and instead of it being nebulous, what happens when there's that many people in the race? what does the outcome of the primary mean when there's, you know, five or six people on the ballot?
Right.
And I'll leave it there. And thanks for sticking in there and running. And I think it's going to be really interesting. I just wanted you to know this. I mean, I know that Denny's hanging in there, and then you, and there's Ken, and Elsie's hanging in there. So I just thought I'd throw that out there because there's some dynamic stuff going on, and we need to get the people educated about who the best person is.
Thank right. You. Well, thank you for your call. Yeah, first of all, there are a couple of panels and debates scheduled. I know there's one coming up next Friday here in Yellowstone County. And there's also the Farmers Union is doing one in the next couple of weeks. So there are a couple of debates that are scheduled. You know, what I worry about in debates with such a broad group is it's hard for the audience to, you know, really process that much information from that many people. And you don't want it to be so long that you put everybody to sleep, but you want it to be meaningful so you can actually compare and contrast the strengths of the candidates. And just to be clear, I'm happy to debate with anybody, and I don't care how many there are or, you know, who they are. But, you know, one of the things that we've done to kind of make it more useful is like what they do in the presidential debates is you have to hit a certain criteria to make the debate stage. And that's not saying that the people who didn't hit that criteria, that they're, you know, messages aren't relevant, but I just think it's more useful for people that have a path to victory to hear those so that you're hearing, you know, who you might vote for or support. So there's that part. And then to answer your simpler question is this is a simple majority. So whoever, we don't have any runoffs in Montana. So whoever gets the most votes on June 4th will be the Republican nominee for that race.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I don't recall a race that is so crowded with so many potential winners. I mean, yeah. You know, and good candidates as well. Yeah. So
and everybody's got their, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. But there's also just the math of who has a path. And this late in the game, if you are a very low polling candidate, there's not a whole lot of time to change that. And so, you know, I know in the presidential debates, they look at, you know, either number of donors or they'll look at, you know, amounts raised. They'll because that shows a clear indication. Having a broad support of people who are willing to write even a small check to support a candidate shows real grassroots support. And so if you see somebody that's got a broad number of donors, that is almost always an indication. We found that people who, you know, just solely self-fund, you know, tend to not win because they haven't done that hard work of actually talking to voters and donors and earning that support. And so,
So you've got some results.
As our last report, which was a couple of weeks ago, we had 9,020 individual donations. And I'm really proud of that. And these are not, you know, all large donors. These are $5 donors, you know, $100 donors. You know, they're across the board, $1,000 donors. And, you know, I'm really proud of that. I am absolutely convinced that we're going to have the broadest support of anybody in this race.
And that is a good measure.
Absolutely. It shows a path to victory.
Yep. So now, caller, if you want to call back and ask a question, phones are still open, 866-627-5483. Skip, thanks for that one. I want you to tell that fraud story rather quickly about, because in your position, Commissioner of Securities and Insurance and Montana State Auditor, you have fought fraud at that level. We look at a certain amount of lawlessness that's creeping into our societies. Maybe it's just local damage being done, so to speak, but there is lawlessness, I think, creeping into our thinking about society. So tell that little story, and then let's talk about how we prevent crime across this country.
Right. Was this the crypto one?
The AI being used now. Yeah.
A lot of the fraud, because we, you know, as I mentioned before, we are a criminal justice agency, and we do investigate and prosecute crimes in securities and insurance. And under the securities part, you know, that's pretty broad. That includes, you know, Ponzi schemes and a lot of other types of things. But what we've seen in our office is about 75% of the financial fraud that we investigate and prosecute is perpetrated against seniors. And so we actually have a team that was created in my administration to just deal with the specific issues with crimes against seniors. But some of the stuff that's coming across the table now is, you know, some of these are really old schemes that have a new face because of technology. And, you know, the use of artificial intelligence is one of those. So, like, there's this scam that's been around forever of somebody pretending to be a grandkid and calling the grandparents and saying, you know, I'm in trouble. They're going to throw me in jail. I'm in Mexico. Don't tell my parents. Please buy a bunch of gift cards and read the serial numbers over the phone. And when that was text or email, that was one thing. And now with artificial intelligence, they can go to that grandkid's, you know, YouTube or Instagram or TikTok account, take a small sample of their voice and then emulate it with artificial intelligence to actually sound like that kid. And so it gets harder and harder to fight that sort of stuff as we start to see technology, you know, increase those tools, even if some of these scams that have been around forever. And, you know, one of the other things and that I think is interesting, we were talking about a little bit earlier, is we see this scam going around again, mostly perpetrated against seniors. Well, they'll do a little pop-up on somebody's phone saying, you know, we've installed child pornography on your phone. We're calling law enforcement. You're going to jail unless you go take $10,000 out of the bank and put it into this crypto ATM. And when this first, you know, came up, I was like, well, how many crypto ATMs are there in Montana? They are everywhere. Even in the smallest towns in Montana, you can usually find one at a gas station. You can find them at drugstores. They're all over the place.
And crypto, specifically crypto ATMs. Yeah,
exactly.
Not bank ATMs, regular.
It's basically a way to either turn Bitcoin or, you know, any of those cryptocurrencies into cash, or, you know, the other way around, to buy it with these ATMs. And so the scammers will give them a little QR code on their phone, so they scan it on the machine, so it goes into the account of the scammer. And one of the things that I thought was really troubling is I see these things all over the state. Is I walked into a couple and I'd talk to the employees at these stores and I'll say, you know, do you ever see anybody using this? And they'll say, yeah, a couple of times a week I'll see somebody. Well, tell me about it. Well, usually somebody in their 70s with a stack of $100 bills sticking it in the machine. And I'll say, well, does that seem odd to you? I go, yeah, a little bit. I'm going, yeah, because that person is being robbed. That person being robbed right in front of you. And so we're dealing with, you know, really, because there's a legitimate reason for blockchain technology, for distributed ledgers, for they're you know, I'm not against this. We just need to understand how it's being used to harm people. And one of the biggest issues that we've seen recently, because of the complete abandonment of any regulation, is what happened with Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest financial fraud schemes that we're going to see, you know, in recent history. And what happened there is they were running it as an exchange to, you know, think of New York Stock Exchange. So people were trading Bitcoin or, you know, Ethereum or whatever their currencies were. And since it wasn't regulated, this guy, Bankman-Fried, was taking money from depositors without their permission and knowledge and making bets on the side that he was losing. And that was what started that whole downfall. I mean, can you imagine that happening at the New York Stock Exchange? Mm-hmm. It would never happen. Mm-hmm. And so there's this balance of, you know, people like the thought that these cryptocurrencies are anonymous and they're not, you know, there's no central banks that are influencing them. And there's a lot of reasons that people like this, but we also need to be cautious on who's transacting this with us. Because even though there are legitimate reasons for it to exist, and that's one of the things we need to fight and understand in Congress, is what is, you know, a reasonable way of protecting consumers from this, you know, from like FTX. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was billions of dollars lost, while still making sure that we're open to innovation and new ideas and new technology, which is, you know, the lifebeat of America.
And one of the small tools that remedied this was you putting placards, or encouraging in your office putting placards on those crypto ATM machines that will warn people about that as well. So real just like a real small quick solution and things like that, and a reminder for everybody out there, if you're being asked to use crypto ATMs, be very cautious about that. Talking about energy, this is where I want to go next. And I'm going to throw it open. I'll save the last 2 minutes for whatever pitch you want to make. But talk to me about energy. We look at these EPA tailgate emissions. We look at the mandates. That's another area where I think wisdom is absent. We need to stir that into this energy transition.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's just so many bad ideas on trying to steer us to, you know, a carbon neutral economy. And we're starting to see a bit of backlash. I mean, I just wrote a letter recently about California trying to mandate electric trains.
I know.
I mean, trains are the cheapest, most efficient way of moving cargo, and they want to make it less efficient and have issues with other states by making these electric. But
we may have that on Tuesday as well. I can't guarantee that, but we're looking at
I actually just sent a letter a couple of days ago about that, obviously not in opposition to that. But, you know, another thing that, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, national security, about border security, about energy security. But I think another thing that is really important is to talk about food security. You know, I really see that as a national security. And we already talked about production agriculture land issues, but there's so many other issues that we need to do to make sure that we are supporting our farmers and ranchers. And, you know, I sit on the HAIL board, and so we talk a lot about, you know, HAIL insurance on the state level. You know, the Farm Bill, you know, obviously has some issues, but there's some programs there that are incredibly important to our producers. You know, the crop insurance, the price protections, you know, the disaster loans. There's so many programs to rural development that are incredibly important to an agriculture-based economy and incredibly important, especially here in eastern Montana, that we need to support. And then on the beef side, you know, there's so many conversations out there on how to make sure that our beef producers are put in the best spot that they can, because it's farming and ranching is a tough business, and you're subject to the whims of pricing and you know, regulatory issues. And, you know, the issues that we're talking about now are, you know, country of origin labeling, of electronic logging devices and trucks, of, you know, understanding that, you know, Montana is a big state. We have a lot of dirt here. We have to move product a long way. And so having, you know, reasonable rules on how we can move product out is incredibly important to our ranchers. Just making sure that we are giving them the tools to continue producing the best protein on the planet and, you know, producing the best agricultural products. You know, I always joke, you know, I own a distillery, and we are 100% grown in Montana. I always say we're a Montana agriculture value add product. We take perfectly good, you know, sweet corn from Corvallis and malted barley out of Great Falls, and we turn it into bourbon. And I think that's the highest and best use right there. But I think it's really important that we have more value add production in the state. I think we need to stand up. And you know, I get a little bit of kickback, especially from some of my colleagues in other states, and they're saying, well, why do we really care about that? And I said, well, here's the deal. You know, we can all live without your, you know, coastal Florida houses, but as a country, we need to eat, and that's a national security issue.
Troy, I appreciate you stopping by. No time left to ask how the campaign trail is going. You just get out there on it, eh?
Yeah, that's what we do. We're working hard, and we're going to take this to the finish line.
TroyDowning.com for more information on that as well. Be safe out there, too.
Thank you, sir. And, TroyDowning.com. You have questions, criticisms, I take it all.
Appreciate the focus on public service, too.
Thank you.
Need that from
my honor.
Right. Thanks again for joining us for the podcast. Please share and subscribe and let us know what you think. Email me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. And don't forget, we're on weekdays on your hometown radio stations all across Montana. We hope to hear from you there, too.